Hello, welcome to Books in the Biz, a podcast that looks at both the financial and operational sides of success. Please welcome our hosts, Dan Paulson and Richard Veltre. Dan is the CEO of Envision Development International, and he works with leaders to increase sales and profits through great cultures with solid operations. Rich is CEO of the Veltre Group and a financial strategist working with companies to manage their money more effectively. Now on to
Hello and welcome to Books in the Biz. Rich, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, thank you. How are you?
Awesome. I am doing wonderful. It's warming up in the state of Wisconsin. No more permafrost, so that is excellent. And we have a special guest with us today, Joe Staffeld. How are you doing?
Excellent. Thanks for having me. Yeah.
You bet. Glad to have you here. So, Rich, to give you a little bit of background, Joe and I met on a cruise of all places. Actually, before a cruise. I believe we were off sipping pina coladas in the bar that pina coladas were invented in, or so they tell us anyway.
Barrachina.
Barrachina. And ever since then, we got to hang out on the cruise together, got to learn a little bit more about Joe and what he's doing. And nice part is you got some interesting stories to tell us that I think align with what we have been preaching about for a long, long time. So why don't you give us a little bit of background of you, the company you own, and kind of how you got to where you're at today?
Yeah. I'm a owner, CEO of Foundry, located just south of Youngstown, Ohio. Basically, it's two foundries under one roof. So we have two different processes. The foundry was started in 1956 in Hubbard, Ohio, and then moved to its current location in 1962. My father bought into this business in 1977. And, you know, they had, I think, 9 employees and 12 shareholders. So over the years, he and the two other sons of the original founder proceeded to buy the shareholders out. And I came on board in 99 as an employee and then learned the ropes along the way, and then bought my dad out in 04 and bought his partner out in 2012.
Nice. So that got you to at least, you know, where we're talking about today. Give me a little bit of background on that. What was it like working for a family business? Because we know there's a lot of them out there.
Yeah, well, it wasn't handed to me. I graduated college in the early 90s with an engineering degree, and my dad said, you need to go get 10 years of experience. You need an MBA, and you need about 3 to 4 years of sales experience in engineering or manufacturing sales. He's like, you're not going to come in and ride the coattails and have some Tommy Boy moments in this business. Make your mistakes on someone else's tab. So the next 10 years, I followed through with his guidance and mentorship, and they hired me in 1999 as kind of a sales manager. They created a position for me to kind of come in and grow the sales in different industries, because we, at that point in time, I think Diebold had become like 35% of our total sales, and we needed to do something to change that. We needed to shrink their presence as a big player in our business. So I did that. And brought in some CNC equipment, modernized and automated a lot of the processes for them. So here we are.
Rich, what do you got?
So what were you doing? What were you manufacturing for Diebold?
Pieces, parts for their ATMs, deposit boxes, nighttime depositories, any mechanism that was internal workings.
Okay. Have you, at this point, are you at the point now where you're starting to see that you've done all the acquiring in? Are you now trying to see how acquiring or having someone else acquire in? Do you have a vision for where this might be headed, or
yeah,
how do you feel it?
Well, as far as, well, I did bring a business partner in, and sold him 30% of the business. He's a few years younger than me, and the intentions are to eventually down the road have him take on a larger share of the business. And we recently hired a tooling engineer with a very good background who's shown an interest in some ownership. I've been courted by multiple companies looking to acquire us, but I've kind of turned them away at this point. I'm not ready to move yet, but this isn't something that can happen overnight. I'm not going to just show up on Friday and say, hey, guys, I'm done. You need to have a team in place and to do that. And it took me back to my early 90s when my first real job out of college, all the rage was this Stephen Covey, 7 Habits of Highly Successful People. And the one thing that stuck with me over the years was begin with the end in mind. Mm. I didn't buy into this business in 99, 2000s with the end in mind at that point in time. But trust me, over the last 20 years, it's crossed my mind, like, what's my end game? You know, how am I going to get out? Was it going to be one of my children that came into the business? You know, the older one's going to go to med school. My middle child graduates in May. It's going to be a school teacher like mom. And my youngest is studying chemical engineering at Ohio State. So, you know, we're going to, you know, I don't have, you know, none of them at this point in time have come to me and said, hey, I really want to work in the family business. Mm. They've all worked there in the summers, pushing a button on the CNC machine and, you know, pushing a broom around for us. But at this point, it doesn't look like it's going to be handed down to the next generation of my family.
Okay. Go
ahead.
Do you see it, because it's interesting to me, do you see it as more strategic or better for you to, you know, to allow the outside companies to court you, or do you see it more along the lines of this is sort of an apprentice sale? And I bring this up because someone hit me with that today, and I never really kept the apprentice sale thought in my head. But it does seem to be out there where you get a slightly older partner gets a younger partner. And then as they grow, the younger partner buys out the older partner, and then it just repeats. Mm-hmm. So the business can still grow. So I didn't know if you had thought of that or if that was part of your thought pattern. You know,
that's what kind of happened to me. I mean, I had grown up, you know, drilling holes in parts since eighth grade. Always thought that this is where I was going to end up. And when I graduated, you know, that job wasn't there. I had to go find my own job. And, it was, you know, just not part of the plan. They didn't have a succession plan when they hired me. I think it was something that kind of popped in their head, like, ooh, this guy could come in and learn the ropes, and then we could go play more golf and take more trips. And it was a smooth transition, but I really had to push for it. I had to show them that I wanted it, show them that I was capable of it. And, you know, it's definitely something I know how to do that more than sell it to an outside party, because I've been through the process on the other side of the table. And I think going with an outside company would be more challenging. And I think there'd be more negotiating. But at that point, I think I'd probably get a higher price for it as well if I decided to go that route. I think selling to my business partner and another younger individual that we hired and brought in, I would be willing to stay on board as a consultant and sell and come in and cover if they needed to take a vacation or needed me as a, you know, sub in for them.
Okay.
So we've talked, you know, quite a bit on the cruise ship, and we talked a little bit even before we got on the recording here. You know, what you experienced, I think, is different than what a lot of people experience, especially in family run businesses where it's almost expected that one of the siblings or one of the children will take over, take responsibility for it. And they're almost like gifted into it. And you know, when we talked before, I mentioned that most businesses don't survive three generations. There's the first one that builds it, the second one grows it, third one kills it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, your dad took quite a different approach. So it intrigues me that he had the foresight, even if he wasn't thinking about succession, that you needed outside experience. You need to cut your teeth before you were kind of handed the reins on anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, what would you tell, you know, other companies out there? Because we know right now there's probably 70% of businesses are going to exchange hands in the next 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what would you tell somebody else if they were getting ready to, or considering, you know, what their next option is?
I think it was brilliant. I really do. He's one of the smartest guys I ever knew. And, you know, it was good experience. It allowed me to kind of spread my own wings and do my own thing and learn. And, you know, I was had access to training and management courses, and they, you know, these outside companies picked up the tab on some of my graduate school. I was able to travel with them and see equipment, modern equipment and modern processes, things that really weren't available or our small little family business didn't have access to. And to be able to see it all, experience it all, work with this expensive software and these five-axis CNC machines, and then to come into this small little business that didn't have any of that and just introduce them into what a CNC machine was and what 3D modeling was and 3D printing. You know, they didn't use it. And I was able to expose myself to it and then bring that to our business and just bring them into the new technology. So it's really, we had to do it.
If you're going to keep up with what's needed in today's age, that's about the only way you can compete, is you really have to see what others are doing and modify towards that. What was the, I guess, in that transition phase? So as you said, your parents or your dad didn't really have a succession plan in place. You kind of nudged the issue along,
mm-hmm.
we'll say. What was that process like? How did the discussion go? What kind of transpired over the next several years before you finally started buying into the business?
Yeah, well, they brought me in for like an interview. Like it was an actual, this was not a, hey, let's go have lunch. I had to interview with my dad's business partner. At that time, my dad was the minority shareholder of this.
Oh, company. Okay.
So he was not the majority shareholder. He was minority shareholder. He said, you will need to speak to my boss, my president, my business partner. My dad was vice president and Bill was the president. So Bill and I had multiple conversations and he said, you know, what do you need? I told him, you know, I need this salary. I need a cell phone and I need a company car and I'm going to come in and grow your sales for you. And they brought me in and that was 99, 2000. And by 2004, we had met with some attorneys, met with a CPA. These were local people that had been their counsel of the business for years. So there was already an established calculation for the valuation that they would review on an annual basis. They met quarterly. And, you know, I said, I accept this calculation. You know, I got to sit in on their quarterly meetings when they would close the quarter, got to sit in when we closed the fiscal year. And I just learned a lot about the books and how profitable the business could be at times. And thought, okay, I could afford this. And it was an earnout. I did not have to go get, you know, commercial paper person, you know, go get a bank involved. These guys, they financed it and it was a 15-year note at, you know, the going rate. You know, and I had, you know, a lot of, you know, my buddy, golf buddies, you know, I've got a car payment, house payment, boat payment. You know, I didn't have that, but it was like, I had a foundry payment.
Right.
And it was big.
Yep.
So, but we're done with all that now, but it took a long time.
Yeah. Well, the difference between the car payment and the foundry payment is the foundry payment's now paying you back, where the car is probably long gone and replaced by another car.
Correct.
Replaced by another car.
And it was definitely another car.
We all know what that is.
So once I had my dad's 40% tied up, in 04. I worked another 7 years with his business partner. And in 2010, 2011, Bill let me know that, you know, it was time for him to go. Mm. And so we sat down and did the same calculations, and I signed up another note with Bill to get a second foundry payment for the other half, over half of the business. It was a 60-40 split.
Yep.
My dad's 40 and then Bill's 60. And then the following year, I sold 30%, you know, half of what I bought from my dad's partner to a young gentleman that I had met and interviewed and said, okay, this is going to be my business partner, which is kind of like a marriage.
Right.
It's my work wife, work husband. But he's a great, great man, good family man, hard worker, and amazing guy.
So what was the process you went through to find him?
This is a weird story. I had bought an old hobby farm, and I was out hunting in the woods, and he lived down the street, and he happened to have permission to hunt in the woods behind my property, and I found Dan in the woods, literally. We crossed paths. I said, hey, I'm Joe. Hi, I'm Dan. Where are you from? I live up the street, and what do you do? And find out we're neighbors, and we had similar hobbies. He was in manufacturing, and he was in between jobs. The company that he was working for locally had downsized, and his wife is an executive with a design company, and she was possibly being transferred. And I think they were looking to move to Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Mm.
And I think at that time, I hired him before I bought the other half of the business. And I had called my business partner, said, hey, you know, I really want you to meet this guy, and we got to interview him, and I want to make an offer to him. He's like, well, I'll be home in a couple of weeks. He's down in Florida. So I'll be home in a couple of weeks. I'll talk to him then. I was like, no, he's going up to buy a house right now. And Bill just said, hey, you know, he's going to be your business partner. He goes, you do what you need to do. He goes, I don't have to deal with him. So I called Dan and said, hey, turn around. You know, you're going to come here, work for 2 years, things work out, you can buy in. So that's how I found Dan. It was just, it's been a great partnership. Been over partners for over, 13, 14 years now, worked together for 15 years.
So is he eventually looking for another foundry payment and going to take a bigger chunk of the equity?
Well, hopefully I told him that, my window is 5 to 10 years out, and you know he's not a lot younger than me, but you know he plans to work until 62, and I think he's 6 years younger than me. So I think the intentions are there. You know, that might be his desire to take on a larger chunk of it, but this younger guy that we brought in last year is doing a great job for us. And I told him that if things worked out in 2 years, he would have a ownership opportunity. So we did a nationwide search, and we vetted a lot of guys, and he dotted all the I's and crossed all the T's for someone that we wanted to go into business with. So.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rich, what questions do you have? I've been taking up all the time here, so.
No, I think you were hitting on all the questions that I was thinking of. I'm blanking.
I blanked Rich. That never happened.
Right. It doesn't happen. No one shuts me up except for Dan.
Well, here's a question for you, Joe. You know, you talked a little bit about your relationship with your dad. What was it like working with your father? Because there's a number of multi-generational businesses out there. We often hear about the dynamics that tends to happen in those companies. You know, any family has its challenges, but you hear about the infighting and, you know, the push for power, the push for control. What was it like working with your dad?
Well, he was my dad first, and then a coach. He coached baseball, wrestling, you know, so we were always spending a lot of time together, taught me how to do a lot of things. But you know, when I went to work for him full time, you know, I'd worked part-time over the years, mm-hmm. drilling holes in parts or grinding, or I helped put in their first computer and hooked up a Novell network system for them.
That's dating all of us.
Yeah. Yeah. Monochrome monitors and that weighed 400 pounds. It was fun. But, you know, we had our moments, and because during those times I was part-time, I was a poor college kid or a poor high school kid and needed his financial support. When they hired me, I was kind of my own man by then. I had worked for other people. I had money in the bank. I was married. I had a son, you know, so it was a different kind of, he looked at me as a coworker, or an employee, and he was my boss. So I showed that respect to him. But there were times when I said, hey, we need to buy a CNC machine. We're getting our heads caved in on some of this stuff, you know, manual machining and stuff, the way we're doing it, it's taking too long. And I had just finished my MBA, and he's like, well, you know, show me the returns. I'm like, all right. So I had to get my spreadsheet out and do all these calculations. I took one or two parts from Diebold and said, okay, it's currently taking us 14 minutes to machine this part. And on the CNC machine, it's going to take us 2 minutes. And so at 12 minutes at our current shop rate, blah, 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 you know, I justified buying this piece of equipment with two parts and said, that, you know, the payback's going to be in 6 months. He's like, really? He's like, can we buy five? And I'm like, well, we only need one right now, but yeah, we'd like to grow with this. But you know, it was, we locked horns and butted heads, but it was in a respectful coworker kind of thing. You know, we had our own home life outside of that, but it was, and then he was a grandfather too, my children. So it was at the same time, but it was a good relationship. And I miss him. And
yeah,
you showed me all these Thursdays on your calendar, and I looked and I'm like, you're right there. And I picked today to kind of honor him, because today is the 6 year anniversary of when he passed.
Mm.
So that's why I picked today.
Well,
it's
a good way to honor him. And I think another way you can honor him with any other listeners or anyone who eventually, you know, tunes into this podcast. We talked a little bit about it on this, but we talked more about, you know, before as we were prepping for this, companies don't prepare for the future. When you look at, you know, what you've done, and when you look at other businesses, maybe you have other connections that you're aware of that, you know, they're starting to think along the same lines of what's my next move or what's my end game. Mm-hmm. What do you tell them? Because we were joking around beforehand that, you know, most people is kind of like they wait until they're at their most frustrated point about something, and they're looking at their watch and they're looking at the calendar at their age, and they're going, you know, there's much better things I could be doing right now. I'm done.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then they want to be done like now, like get me out of here in the next 6 months. And as you pointed out previously, it takes more than 6 months just to find somebody to broker the business often. So
yeah, you got to figure out what it's worth. And mm-hmm. you gotta package it. And if it's going to be an outside company that's coming in, then they're going to want to see the last, you know, multiple years of your tax returns, your balance statements, your profit and loss. And you know, you need to have that in good shape. Now, if you're looking at almost like that apprenticeship type handoff where it's like an earnout, these guys are already intimately aware of what the company can do, bottom line, net mm-hmm. income. They're comfortable with it. They know everything. And it's like, yeah, okay, you know, let's just do this. And, but yeah, to prepare for it, for another business, to hand it off or to sell it, it's going to take 3 to 5 years, 6 years to start thinking about your exit. Unless someone just comes in off the street and wants your business to, you know.
How many people do you know, Rich, that are willing to walk in and write a huge check?
None.
None. Well, damn it.
None.
I was hoping there'd be somebody out there that I could
I was hoping that was there. I was always hoping there'd be people in my back pocket that could do that, but they're not there. They're just not there. They want too many assurances and checks and balances. They want to know all that before they're even going to think about writing a check.
Mm-hmm.
And even then they may not. So,
well, the only time I've ever seen that happen is when somebody's buying out their competition and they're just paying a lot of money to make a thorn in their side go away.
Yep. Yep.
Awesome.
And that's,
Well, then in that 3 to 5 year period, you need to become a larger thorn.
Yes. Yes. And most companies don't do that. They don't do that.
No.
What other advice would you give to a business owner that might be considering their next move, Joe?
Jeez. What are you going to do when you're done? I mean, it's like the journey. You climbed Mount Everest. You made it to the top. And now what? What are you going to do later? You got to have some ideas. Of what are your interests, hobbies? Are you going to find a second career? Those are things I think you introduced me to someone that recommended a book. It says, Finish Big.
Mm, yep.
Yeah. So I'm buzzing through that right now, but what's the next chapter going to have for you? You can't just leave on a Friday and be retired on Monday and okay, what am I doing?
There's very few people that can play a round of golf every day or several rounds of golf every day for the rest of their life and feel fulfilled by it.
I know a couple guys like that. That's not me though.
Yeah. That's a very small handful, whether it's fishing or golf or vacationing or whatever. You need something to keep your mind active you really don't last long, because once your purpose is gone, pretty much that's when a lot of people check out.
Yeah.
Well, excellent. Well, Joe, thank you for your time. If somebody needs to get a hold of you, especially for any parts or components, what's the best way to do it?
Joe, J-O-E, at Albco, ALBCO.com. That's my email address.
Excellent. Well, we hope they will check you out and get some parts ordered through you. Rich, how do they get a hold of us? Take us out.
Email is always the best. Rich@xcxo.net.
And you can get me at dan@xcxo.net. And if you want to catch this interview with Joe as well as others, you can visit booksandbiz.com. That is B-O-O-K-S, the letter N, B-I-Z.com. Be sure to like, share, and subscribe, because that's what they always tell us to do. And Bob, take it away.
Want to boost your sales and profits, but need the talent to help you grow? XCXO is a one-of-a-kind platform to find skilled fractional executives to help develop your team into a high-performance powerhouse. Fractional leadership is a great choice when you consider the average executive-level candidate can cost you hundreds of thousands of dollars in salaries, benefits, and incentives. XCXO finds you the executive and utilizes their talents to build your team's experience, all for a fraction of the cost of a full-time C-suite leader. Contact XCXO today to fill the gaps in your leadership team. Visit xcxo.net.